The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com, The Lasting Impact of Online School. And this article was written by Fiona Lee. For the past 3 years, I've been immersed in virtual classrooms after I transitioned to all online learning due to the pandemic. As someone who has directly experienced both online school and a return to in-person classes, and has experienced what in-person school was like before COVID hit the globe, I've felt the negative effects and lasting impacts that a lack of traditional schooling can bring. The isolation of learning solely through a computer took a mental and social toll that lingered. Even after coming back to school, I have forgotten how to communicate with people effectively, and my self-confidence and social skills have dropped rapidly. I missed out on everyday interactions with peers between classes and after school, and presentations that should be done in front of the class, not staring in front of a screen. The virtual school felt hollow compared to the lively energy of being with classmates. Over time, this disconnect negatively impacted my well-being as loneliness set in, and I am still healing from it. Staying focused from home also proved challenging as distractions like phones, TV, and my comfortable bed and PJs made concentrating even more difficult without the structure of a physical school setting and without teachers eyeing you. The transition out of online school has been an adjustment as I continue to adapt socially. I am still learning how to study effectively once again in a busy classroom environment. Below, I will share some of the major lasting impacts that my classmates and I faced or are still facing after years of online school. Confidence and social skills. One of the most notable impacts I experienced was how my social skills and confidence significantly declined after 3 years of virtual schooling. I became uncomfortable engaging with my peers in person, as I am so used to texting online and talking to profile pictures instead of real people in front of me, finding it difficult to have natural interactions and conversations like I once did before the pandemic hit. My self-esteem also took a big hit as public speaking anxiety emerged, knowing I would have to relearn how to comfortably present and share my thoughts in front of a classroom, rather than being isolated behind a computer screen. By my third year of online classes, I started to feel completely out of practice socially, and I was not disconnected from my classmates after I returned to school. Simple things like meeting friends during lunch or making small talk in the hallways became difficult because I had forgotten how to have casual in-person conversations and make connections. The transition has been extremely challenging as I work to rebuild those social skills and confidence that eroded in the lonely trenches of virtual learning. Concentration problems in class and doing homework. Between the distractions of active class discussions and extra noises, maintaining focus in lessons has been challenging. I frequently lose my train of thought while taking notes and listening to the teacher speak. It takes real effort for me not to daydream or stare off into space. Once at home, concentrating on completing assignments has also been difficult as temptations from phones, TV, and other distractions disrupt my flow. After years of isolated online learning, I lost the skills to screen out stimuli around me and live without being constantly plugged into a device or streaming service. Rebuilding my focus has required setting strict boundaries and workload limits for myself to start with. I've found it helpful to start in a quiet library or cafe rather than my bedroom until my confidence improves. It's been a learning process, but concentration gradually strengthens with practice. Depression. After experiencing months of seclusion from peers due to virtual schooling, isolation began negatively impacting my mental health. With each passing week spent mostly alone in front of a screen, I descended further into a depressed state. The loneliness I felt was overwhelming as the joy from everyday social interactions at school diminished entirely. Most days, it became a struggle just to complete assignments or do basic self-care tasks. I found little motivation to care for myself, with no social or school obligations pulling me out of bed each morning. Communicating with classmates and teachers solely through video chat left me feeling more detached than connected, craving real human interaction. All the while, pandemic worries swirled as the future seemed uncertain. Would in-person schooling ever return? By my second year of virtual classes, depression had fully set in, manifesting as tearfulness, loss of interest in activities I once enjoyed, difficulty concentrating, changes in appetite and sleep patterns with insomnia hitting hard, and an overall bleak outlook on life. Simple tasks like sending a friend request or commenting on social media posts felt exhausting. I knew I needed help, but reaching out was a challenge. Online counseling options provided limited relief over video meetings. I struggled to be vulnerable before a screen versus talking to someone face to face. At my lowest points, intrusive thoughts grew hard to ignore. It wasn't until I re-entered full in-person classes and reconnected with others that my mental state gradually started improving. Being surrounded by peers daily and engaging socially through hands-on group work helped lift my mood significantly. The experience highlighted how crucial interaction and friendship are for adolescent well-being, especially when enduring stressful, prolonged isolation. Final thoughts. While online schooling posed immense challenges, focusing on minor improvements each day has shown me how far I've come. Slowly, skills and confidence lost during lonelier periods return through little acts of bravery where I push past my comfort zone. Although complete focus and self-motivation remain a work in progress, overcoming obstacles has equipped me with valuable life tools. While mental and emotional adjustments take time, choosing resilience over resentment gives solace. Difficult transitions build character when faced with grit instead of giving up. Although some effects may linger, prioritizing growth means leaving past troubles in their place. Difficult transitions build character when faced with grit instead of giving up. Although some effects may linger, prioritizing growth means leaving past troubles in their place. Some challenge ultimately refines the human spirit by embracing lessons through open eyes and ears instead of closed hearts. I hope that more may feel less alone in their adjustments and find renewed purpose. For any facing similar transitions or trials, remember that strength exists in seeking help, community, and a future filled with unwritten, brighter days. Stay positive. Our next article from TeenVogue.com, How Anti-Abortion Laws Are Being Used to Criminalize Pregnancy. And this article was written by Brittany McNamara. Roe v. Wade was overturned in June 2022, but for years before that, the anti-abortion movement was trying to restrict and eliminate abortion access through fetal personhood laws. These laws operate on the idea that fetuses have the same rights as any already born person, therefore equating abortion to murder. But fetal personhood laws don't just influence abortion access. They can also contribute to criminalization of a woman's actions during pregnancy. A new investigation from The Meteor has highlighted how fetal personhood laws can extend well past abortion access, as in the case of Lauren Smith, a South Carolina woman who has lost custody of two of her three children and faces up to 10 years in prison after being charged with felony child neglect. According to The Meteor, the charge stems from her use of marijuana to treat relentless nausea while pregnant. According to reporter Nita Talui Samnani's story, Smith said she experienced intense nausea during pregnancy, so bad that she needed to be hospitalized multiple times. She started using marijuana to self-treat her symptoms. After delivering a healthy daughter, Smith says she was told that she tested positive for THC in a drug screening she says she didn't know was being done, and that her daughter's meconium, an infant's first stool, which retains remnants of things ingested during pregnancy, had also tested positive. That's when she says her daughter was taken from her and placed in the custody of her paternal grandmother. According to The Meteor, this eventually led to another of Smith's children being taken out of her custody. Now she awaits trial. Smith is one of a growing number of women who use marijuana during pregnancy, despite the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists' recommendation against it. While marijuana remains illegal in South Carolina, Smith notably wasn't charged with drug-related crimes. Instead, she was charged with child neglect. This, Talui Samnani wrote, underscores the implications far beyond abortion that anti-abortion laws can have. Smith's story shows how the same governments breathlessly passing abortion bans are using related legal theories to police pregnancy, Talui Samnani explained. This story not only reveals how the same laws that are purported to protect unborn life have destroyed families in the process and have left mothers, fathers, grandparents, and caregivers to navigate the complex web of social service agencies, law enforcement officers, prosecutors, medical staff, and other agencies alone. The Meteor reported that 27 states, as of 2022, have included fetal personhood or personhood-adjacent laws in their post-Roe anti-abortion legislation, and that Smith is one of hundreds of women who have been arrested for actions related to their pregnancy. Earlier this year, the Marshall Project reported on how some states, including South Carolina, are expanding how they use child neglect and abuse laws, prosecuting pregnant women under the umbrella of fetal personhood. The Marshall Project also reported that most states might refer a pregnant woman who uses drugs to a child welfare agency, not police, and highlighted the potential harm of increasing pregnancy criminalization, including the negative impacts of separating babies from their mothers. This kind of criminalization, one expert told The Meteor, could increasingly police what pregnant people are and aren't allowed to do, in ways that may be surprising. If you're pregnant and you fall down the stairs, you could be charged with a crime, Tripp Carpenter, a legal fellow with Pregnancy Justice, told The Meteor. If you're pregnant and you drive without a seatbelt, you could be charged with a crime. If you're pregnant and you have a glass of wine or you use drugs, you could also be charged with a crime. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com, 7 Ways to Prevent Academic Fatigue. And this article was written by Ava Jankowski. Academic fatigue happens to all of us, whether it's your entire freshman year or right before your SAT. Everyone experiences burnout at some point. I had academic burnout at the end of my sophomore year in high school, but I came up with ways to prevent it, and by finals, I was back to my normal standard. This year, I've been implementing these into my routine. Here are 7 tips to prevent academic fatigue from happening to you this year. 1. Prioritize sleep. Sleep is something that does not get enough recognition. 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night makes a big difference to your academic performance and your mood in general. As you sleep, your brain processes information from the previous day during the last 4 hours of your cycle. So, not getting 8 hours of sleep may result in incomplete processing of some information. If you think about it, the information you learned at school the previous day could not be fully processed. This helps with academics because it ensures the information is retained in your brain, which will help on assessments. Also, you will be a lot happier when you have more sleep. 2. Make a homework schedule. Having a homework schedule is important because it will ensure that you are focused on your priorities and help you focus on all subjects. Here is an example schedule for homework and studying. First, focus on any tests or quizzes you have the next day. Then, you will be prepared for your assessments and won't have to sacrifice your study time to sleep. Next, work on any projects or essays that are due soon. You don't need to work on these for long, but make some progress each day so you don't get stuck doing it all the night before. After that, take a break. You have earned time to relax and clear your head by now. I take 10-minute breaks because I feel that is how long I need to recharge. You should take however long you need, as long as it's not preventing you from getting to bed at a normal hour. Then, work on the hardest subject of homework you have, and then the next, and so on, until you are at the easiest subject. Doing the hardest first makes the subject after seem easy, so you don't get irritated doing your hardest homework at 10:30 p.m. While you're doing this, make sure to take breaks in between subjects. In this case, you could take a break after completing 2 subjects. Finally, set yourself a goal for time to be done with work. If you are only running a few minutes over, it's okay. But if it's 11 p.m. and you have 3 subjects left, just sleep. You can make up for the lost points on assessments. 3. Stay on top of your work. Staying on top of your work is crucial to preventing burnout. Doing a little bit of a project every day for the week before it is due will prevent you from cramming it all in a few hours before the due date, and will ensure you have time for your other classes. This will also make your workload seem lighter because you will have a medium amount of homework every day instead of having light homework half of the time and a heavy workload the other half. Trust me, the heavy workload days take a toll on you, even if you don't realize it immediately. 4. Communicate with teachers. This one might seem self-explanatory, but it's helpful to communicate with teachers when you are confused or overwhelmed. Teachers are there to help you learn, so asking additional questions will help you to learn more about the topic. It could also help improve your grades because that bit of extra help could be the difference between an A or a B. Teachers can also help you plan out your schedule for long-term assessments or read over your writing before you turn it in. Either way, meeting with teachers won't hurt your grades at all. 5. Give yourself reasonable goals. Reasonable goals are crucial to avoiding burnout because they ensure you aren't overextending yourself. For example, maybe a straight A in 6 AP classes isn't a reasonable goal because there won't be enough time to sleep and care for yourself. Now, I'm not saying that wanting to get good grades in advanced classes is bad, but maybe aim for A's in those classes instead. Having big dreams is a great quality, but it must be within reason. 6. Get involved. Getting involved in enjoyable activities can help you de-stress and prevent burnout. Maybe you like public speaking, so you join the debate team at school. This will give you a balance between schoolwork and activities you truly enjoy, so it will seem like you are doing less than you are. Also, getting involved in new activities allows you to meet new people, which could lead to breaks in study time because you are hanging out with them. 7. Plan ahead. Planning is crucial to staying on top of your work and preventing burnout. If you know that you have a tournament 3 hours away and won't be returning home until late Sunday night, plan specific times to complete your work. Maybe you work ahead during the week and then spend the car ride finishing your homework. Or you do some homework in your hotel at night. Whatever it is, knowing your schedule and planning around it will help you stay ahead of your work. If you've ever had burnout, you know how hard it is to eliminate it. Try these tips, develop your own methods, and ultimately do whatever helps you to get out of it. If you start using these tips or others early, you might not even experience burnout at all. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com is Quiet Luxury Getting Louder? And this article was written by Gia Chigera. In a world inundated with the ostentatious display of wealth and conspicuous consumption, the concept of quiet luxury has emerged as a whisper amid the cacophony. As I navigate the ever-evolving landscape of lifestyle and fashion, I find myself pondering, is quiet luxury getting louder? Defining quiet luxury. Quiet luxury, in its essence, embodies a subtler, more nuanced approach to opulence. It eschews flashy logos and overt displays of affluence, opting instead for a refined, understated elegance that speaks volumes in its simplicity. This form of luxury is about quality over quantity, craftsmanship over excess, and the art of discernment over the brashness of excess. From logomania to subtle statements. Once synonymous with luxury, logos that were once proudly emblazoned across designer goods are now taking a back seat. There's a growing appreciation for pieces that speak for themselves through impeccable design and quality craftsmanship. It's as if the narrative is shifting from shouting brand names to whispering stories of artisanal mastery. Exclusivity and intimacy. The allure of exclusivity has always been a driving force in luxury. However, quiet luxury introduces a new facet to this exclusivity, intimacy. Limited edition releases, bespoke services, and personalized experiences are becoming the new status symbols, creating a sense of exclusivity that goes beyond the price tag. Sustainability as a luxury virtue. In this era of heightened awareness, another dimension of quiet luxury emerges in the form of sustainability. The conscientious consumer now values the story behind the product, gravitating towards brands that prioritize ethical practices, eco-friendly materials, and a commitment to reducing their environmental footprint. Owning something that aligns with personal values becomes a luxurious experience in itself. Social media and the paradox. While the term quiet implies subtlety, it's intriguing to note that the rise of quiet luxury is happening in the age of social media, a platform often associated with flamboyance. Yet, perhaps it is on these digital stages that the quieter narratives find a louder audience, as influencers and tastemakers celebrate thoughtfulness over excess. A quieter form of luxury resonates with a broader and more discerning audience. Conclusion. So, is quiet luxury getting louder? It seems that way. In a society saturated with noise, the allure of the understated, the carefully curated, and the sustainability conscious is becoming a powerful statement. The luxury landscape is evolving, and as it does, the whispers of quiet luxury are resonating with those who seek depth and meaning in their pursuits of opulence. As I navigate this evolving definition of luxury in my own life, I find solace in the notion that true luxury is not about shouting one's success, but rather about confidently and quietly embracing a lifestyle that reflects one's values, appreciation for craftsmanship, and an understanding that sometimes less truly is more. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Angelina Jolie's daughter, Zahara Marley, joins Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Inc. at Spelman College. And this article was written by Ayana Ishmael. Zahara Marley Jolie has crossed the burning sands into AKA land. The 18-year-old daughter of Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt joined the Sweet Moo Pie chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated at Spelman College. On November 13th, Spelman's AKA chapter posted an anticipatory video on their Instagram page with the caption, "They're coming," with a snippet of a viral Nicki Minaj video in which the rapper says, "I took some time off to rest, and now it's game time," followed by "Hush, hush, somebody's calling your name," one of their sorority chants. 2 days later, when video of the actual neophyte presentation began to circulate, the internet learned one of the 50 line members crossing at Spelman would include Zahara. In a video posted by Essence, she introduces herself. "My name is Zahara Marley Jolie. I landed all the way from the Golden State in the city full of angels, Los Angeles, California, and I am this line's number 7. The crowd erupted into cheers as they welcomed her into the fold, becoming one of the newest members of the esteemed sorority. Notably, Greek life on a historically black college campus is seen as a fundamental part of self-exploration, growth, and sisterhood. AKA is an international service organization that was founded on the campus of Howard University in Washington, D.C. in 1908. It is the oldest Greek letter organization established by African American college-educated women and is the first black sorority recognized in the National Pan-Hellenic Council, Divine Nine, charmingly touted by its members as the first and finest. Zahara began her undergraduate career at the HBCU in 2022 and was seen alongside her mother on move-in day that August. From the beginning, Angelina Jolie has been extremely supportive of Zahara's attendance at the prestigious all-women's college, and now, as her daughter joins a long lineage of powerful women in the sorority, Vice President Kamala Harris, Toni Morrison, Bernice King, to name a few, we can only assume Jolie is just as excited for the legacy Zahara will get to carry forward. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.